Voices of the Elephant is proudly sponsored by SiteGround.com, a leader in website hosting and a terrific partner for all your website projects. Their top-notch technologies will make your websites fast and secure. Welcome to the Voices of the Elephant podcast. Each episode of Voices of the Elephant brings you an interview with a member of the PHP community. From project leaders to user group organizers, we talk to the people that are helping make the PHP community special. Hi, and welcome to another episode of Voices of the Elephant. My name is Cal Evans, and I'm your host. And my special guest today is Mr. Matthias Nobach. Did I say that right?
That's right.
Am I close? Yeah. Okay, I'm close. Okay, good.
Great.
Matthias, I want to thank you for being on the show with us today. I've been following you on Twitter. You've been on my Twitter people list for quite some time, and every time I turn around, you're doing something new, and I have no idea why you've not been on the show, but thank you for helping me correct this wrong and have you on the show today. Now, you've never been on, so I'm going to ask you the same question I ask everybody their first time around. What's your hero backstory? How did you get into programming, and then how did you get into PHP?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a long time ago. I think around the age of 14, something like that, I started getting interested in programming. I had my own computer back then, and it was like, wouldn't it be cool if I could make an application that shows something on the screen with a real window? You know, it was Windows. And I started looking into how would you do this, reading books in the library. And it turns out you have to use C++ for that, which was way too hard for me to understand on my own. Like, there was no teacher around. And so I had this little goal of having an icon in the system tray. So that's I really wanted that. So that was my goal, and I started reading up on it. And I finally managed to do it, but with lots of mistakes, and memory was misused in some way, I don't know. So the whole application broke all the time. I actually called it Denver because I thought it was cool if software had an interesting name. Like Windows 95 was Chicago. Mm-hmm. You know, so it was
days.
A code name. I was like, if it has a code name, it's going to be great. But it wasn't great. So a couple of years later, I was into website design, like trying to put something online on GeoCities, I think it was back then. So I learned some HTML. My father was the first one who was going to give me the first real assignment. So he said, can you build a website for me? He was a professional photographer. So it made a lot of sense to practice the art there and make something real. So that worked out well. It was sort of a portfolio website. It was interesting because it was using ASP back then. I think today ASP is something else, but back then it was the same as PHP, somewhat the same.
ASP Classic, and I remember ASP,
right.
So, you know.
Right. That's a long time ago, but yeah. It was the first steps to do something like real dynamic on the internet. So that was very interesting. And it used an Access database, a file uploaded to the root of the project, like in the public directory. So that I wasn't really aware of any security issue there. I just did it like that. And then someone at school said to me, oh, maybe you should look into PHP. That looks very cool. It's probably been PHP 3 back then. I'm not sure. It could have been 4. Very good times.
Oh, yeah.
Again, lots of security mistakes there, but also design mistakes. Back then, I think it was mostly functions and includes for including the functions file in every PHP file. Interesting times. So gradually I realized, oh, programming is interesting. I want to make web applications. And I started identifying myself as being a developer. So this is just about identity. And then later on, I was like, okay, now I've figured out something and I want to talk about it to other people. So I started blogging and speaking. And now also book writing.
Yes, you're speaking at a lot of different conferences. You speak a lot in Europe, and I speak a lot in the U.S., so we never see each other that much. But it's always fascinating when I go, and I look at every conference when they announce their speaker lineup. It's always fascinating to see who's speaking about things, and I'm always thrilled when I see your name on there. Hey, you said you got your first computer when you were 14. What type of computer did you have?
I don't know the type, actually. I know you should know this, but no, for me it was just as long as it's a computer, and back then it was as long as it can run WordPress WordPerfect.
WordPerfect, yeah.
The very old version of that with the keyboard shortcuts where you had this overlay for the F1, F2, F3, you know, and then...
Oh, I remember those. So obviously it was some kind of IBM compatible type computer.
Probably, yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah. And it was a bit like the vacuum cleaner noise, like...
Oh, yeah. Well, I ran... they actually released a version of WordPerfect for the Commodore 64, which is what I started with. And I actually used that for about 10 minutes. And I was like, no, that's not happening. But that's fascinating. It's always fun to walk down memory lane with developers and find out, how they got started. Because, yes, I remember the include statement that included my functions.php that was just everything I'd written in every other project, you know.
Yes.
It was just, those were good days. Those were good days.
Yeah. It was getting huge over time.
Yeah. They were good days, but I hope they never, ever come back.
Right.
Now it's time for you to be a game changer with the RingCentral Developers Game Changer Program. Grow your skills, help others in the community, and get rewarded with awesome prizes like RingCentral swag, conference tickets, software, iPads, computers, and so much more. Don't just be a developer, be a game changer and join the program today. For more information, visit developers.ringcentral.com. Hey, you've moved on now, and you, like me, like to share what you've learned. And like I said, you speak a lot, and you mentioned you released a book, and you're now you're revising that book for the second edition now. Talk to us a little bit about the book.
Yeah, it's an interesting process. Anyway, it's the fourth book. I'm so far I've been taking the lean publishing road. So. It starts out with one chapter. I put it online on leanpub.com, which is an interesting platform if you're into writing. Of course, you know it.
I've used it several times and really love it, yeah.
Right, yeah. And it's cool because you can put something out and people can, support you buying it when it's not even finished yet. So that's an interesting thing. But it's also a way of putting it out there, and for me, it forces me to just finish this work. You know, so people are waiting for it to be done. So, well, that's a good reason to finish it. And it's been the fourth time now, and this time Manning, I think quite famous publisher of tech books, was interested in taking over this book. They saw potential in it, and they wanted to turn it into a Manning book, which comes with all kinds of extra requirements. So for every chapter, you have to provide exercises, which is something I didn't do so far. You also have to provide many more diagrams as a support for all of the text. And I thought it would be an interesting opportunity to, besides writing and publishing something on my own, also have some feedback from professionals who are always helping authors to get their books done.
Well, it's fascinating. Now, you're working with Manning now instead of just doing it on your own. Are you finding it with LeanPub, like you said, you've got people are actually paying for it, so you feel like you're forced to finish it. With Manning, do you still have that pressure, or is that pressure kind of off and you can take your time to do it as you feel?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the pressure is still there. like publishers have their own schedule, so they want the book to be done by some time, of course, like they should. But there's a different kind of pressure. I still wanted to be a good book for every PHP developer that's out there, because like writing on my own, it's PHP without thinking. But for Manning, it's important to make the book interesting for anybody else, every other object-oriented programmer. And that means we are still in the process of figuring out how to do that, because Java would be a standard language for this kind of book. But no, at the same time, I feel like, well, okay, we shouldn't forget about the origin of the book and, well, who I am as a professional developer. Like PHP is a sort of a second language, so should be good for every PHP developer. So that's a bit of a pressure on my side, but planning wise, I think I have some time to make it right, to do the right thing.
Very cool. Now, the title of the book is An Object-Oriented Style Guide. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, it's a bit of a weird title. I think it's a style guide for object design. We're also looking into trying to turn it into a different title. Well, the idea was that if you're writing code for objects, it will be classes and methods and properties. Mm-hmm. But there's much more to it. What I find is that people are always struggling to find the right approach to this to designing objects in the sense of, like, I know there should be a class named product, but, well, what kind of methods should it have? Do we have state in it? Do we allow state changes? So I thought it would be useful to have a book just explaining what kind of decisions you have to make in this area, and really guide the developer, so that hopefully they can not make these decisions every time again, and they just know what to do, and then they can focus on more interesting things, like what is the actual design, what are the concepts I'm putting into this code, what's the logic.
So give us one tip. Give us your favorite tip that comes from the book so that our readers have something they can take away from this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the biggest realization is that most objects, in fact, should be implemented to be immutable. Because state changes and having object that can change state is always confusing, like reading the code, figuring out some bugs with it. It's always hard if everything is able to change all over the place. So it's good to have immutable objects to define them once and not allow change there. And then, of course, well, you still want to support state changes. So you have to have one type of objects, which I call entities in this book. But it's a pretty common name, which are allowed to change. And these will be at the center of your application.
Very cool. I've done some work with immutable objects. Now, let me ask you, the typical order system, I've got an order. Orders have, we call them line items, but, you know, orders have objects that you've ordered. Every time I add a new item to the order, do I get back a new order, or is the order allowed to have a collection that can mutate?
Right. Yeah, I think order is a pretty common example and has this exact issue. Like, do we allow change? Mm-hmm. I know people who would use immutable objects even there. Mm-hmm. So they would say an order with a new line is basically a completely new order. Mm-hmm. But in this case, in the distinction I make in my book, it's entities are allowed to change to change their state. So you could have a line added to it and it would still be the same order. But at some point you may say, and now we're done. So now we finalize it or something, or complete it, and from that point you will protect state changes to it. But you can just do it in the, say, add line method. You can say, no, this has already been completed, so you cannot add a line to it. So that's the kind of approach you would have there. But every other aspect can be an immutable object, like the price on the line. You wouldn't change the price, but you would just replace the price. That's the different approach there.
Very cool. Well, I'm sure it's a fascinating book. I'll throw a link in the show notes to the LeanPub version, but I'm sure that everybody is anxiously awaiting the new Manning revision. And Manning's a great company. I've read several of their books and have great respect for them.
Yeah. Hey, they're doing great work. Yeah.
Oh, they really do. Yeah. They published one of Rob Allen's early books, and I was on Zen Framework, and I was very impressed with them. The way he talked about them. Right. you've got a very interesting hobby. You do 3D modeling with Blender. Now, I'm assuming that's right. not the food processor. Talk to us a little bit about how you got into 3D modeling.
Yeah, that's interesting. It started out with, I was interested in game development like years ago, and then my partner was into it because she helps people to learn game development themselves and also by themselves, but then helps them figure it out. So that's her job, very interesting job. So she comes home with all kinds of interesting tools and technologies, and we often sit together to figure it out together, like take the next step. So we started with Unity for game development, which is a pretty nice thing to start with if you want to figure that out. It uses C#, by the way, a bit different from PHP. But then the visual aspect came along, like how do we get these models there, all the shapes, the figures and the machines that are in the scenes. And I was like, okay, so I want to be able to model these things myself. And what kind of tool do you need for that? And it turns out Blender is a very nice free tool, which you can use to draw your shapes on the screen, basically. But it will be in 3D. So that's an interesting difference from simply drawing things. You have to move around, walk around, and try to find your way in this 3D modeling space. It's very interesting.
Sadly, it was at this point that Matthias and I experienced some technical difficulties and we lost audio. So I'm going to say thank you, Matthias, for being a guest on Voices of the Elephant. And audience, thank you for spending some time with us today. I hope you found it a valuable investment of your time, and we'll see you here next week on Voices of the Elephant. Thanks for listening to Voices of the Elephant. Voices of the Elephant is copyright EICC Incorporated and released under a Creative Commons Attribution, No Derivatives, Share and Share Alike license. To nominate someone to be a guest on Voices of the Elephant, visit our website and click on the nominate link. The URL is voicesoftheelephant.com. Elephant is, of course, spelled ELEPHPANT.